attention, everybody. I'm proud to announce our next speaker, our keynote speaker of the night. You guys might see him read his stuff in the USA Today. Legendary, the Honorable Jim Bovard.
Whoa, long night. All right. Gotta cut him off. Let's see. Whoa. We got wires here and all sides here. No, this is fine. Is the microphone working?
Yeah, it's all good.
You gotta hold it. Sorry, you gotta hold it up.
Can we do it like this?
Close your face. Yeah, it's
got to
be sorry.
Really close. I'll do it like the Rolling Stones. So thanks very much, Otto, for those kind words. Thanks for the intro. You know, I want to start out by thanking Maryland Libertarians for standing strong on Duncan Lent.
Yeah!
Y'all were great on Duncan Lamb. I mean, there were a lot of folks that would, the stories that I did, y'all would share them, you'd comment, you'd post, you'd push other stories. There were folks I talked to, like Sherry. I was on Otto's podcast. You know, y'all stood strong on Duncan Lamb. And if you contrast that to the Maryland ACLU, who pretended Duncan Lamb did not exist.
Yes.
ACLU took a complete dive on this case. It was a disgrace. But Maryland Libertarians, they stood strong, and I appreciate that. You know, if Duncan Lemp was still alive, he might be here tonight.
Yes,
he would be.
Because he was, you know, he was a very sharp guy. He was an IT guy. He wasn't like Otto or I. He was really savvy. Duncan liked a bunch of John McAfee's quotes, tweets online. And the last tweet that Duncan Lemp ever sent was, "The Constitution is dead." And a few months later, so was Duncan Lemp. So Montgomery County Police admitted that they targeted him because he was, quote, anti-government and anti-police. Plus, he owned guns, so they had to kill him. Okay, it wasn't quite that simple in their narrative, but so Lemp was living with his parents in a quiet neighborhood in Potomac, in a much nicer neighborhood than I could afford. Police raid occurred last March 12th, last year, and I recall flipping through web pages late that night, and all of a sudden I see a reference to a shooting, an incident in Potomac. Now, there are two types of ways that these incidences are portrayed. Now, the first one is, oh my God, a law enforcement officer has been hurt. And the second one is, there is a police-involved shooting. I mean, you know, the thing we should do is have Biden use that phrase, you know, well, police-involved shooting, you know, because that's about all we learn is there's just someone mumbling the damn phrase. But so the police said something about, well, there was a firearms offense. Okay. And then the following day, the police posted photos of five guns from Duncan Lemp. Okay, so what happened? We still don't know. I mean, I was hitting them in some articles. I had a really good editor, Kelly Vallejos, an American conservative. Talking to the Lemp family lawyer and finding out how this stuff went down, he was shot pre-dawn in his bedroom. And this is after cops threw two flashbang grenades in his bedroom. Now, a flashbang, you know, cops say, well, it's just a big, you know, it's like a firecracker. Like hell. Federal court says these flashbangs are like a weapon of mass destruction. They're as loud as four shotgun blasts. They set fires. And, you know, I've had a lot of bad mornings in my life, but I've never had a flashbang going off in my pillow. And that's a whole different level of hell. So county police took a beating from me and some other folks. So the county decided that they had to kind of explain what happened. Okay, so they've been really vague. So county, 4 days later, they issued a statement. They said, here's how it went down. The officers entered the residence, announced themselves as police, and that they were serving a search warrant. Officers gave commands for individuals inside the residence to raise their hand and get on the ground. Upon making contact with Duncan Lemp, officers identified themselves as police gave him multiple orders to show his hands and comply. Lemp refused to comply and proceeded towards the interior bedroom door where other officers were located. Upon entrance by officers into Lemp's bedroom, Lemp was found to be in possession of a rifle and was located directly in front of the interior bedroom door. So this was their account of the shooting. So I read this statement. You know, to be honest, I really couldn't. It had some grammar errors, even in Montgomery County. It had grammar errors, and I really couldn't make heads or tails out of it, so I kind of printed it out. I turned it upside down, and, you know, I even took it, copied it into Google, translated it into French, and then translated back into English, and it still didn't make any sense. So, you know, I was reading this, and so I'm wondering, so what? Did Duncan Lemp die of guilt? Because there was no mention of a shooting in this police account of the death of Duncan Lemp. So, I mean, that's kind of a major omission. I sent follow-up questions to the police department. What was the name of the police officer killed Lemp? I heard nothing. The police refused to answer any questions. The police effectively claimed a Fifth Amendment right to keep silent after killing a county resident. But there's an easy way to resolve this controversy. Go to the videotape. A lot of police departments are now using videotapes. They've spurred some huge controversies. Montgomery County, they're very liberal, and they try to keep the unions happy. So what they did was, in a labor agreement, they allowed the SWAT team not to use CAMCOMs for no-knock raids. So there was no video of the killing of Duncan Lemp. We're told that. So Lemp's case stirred up a lot of ruckus initially. There were some Boogaloo groups and other activists who announced a protest the following month at Montgomery County Police Headquarters. What did the county attorney do? County attorney threatened Lemp's parents with a year in jail and a $5,000 fine if they attended the protest of the killing of their son. So, you know, these some great folks, these county attorneys. But Lemp's parents went anyhow, but stayed on the road. So they weren't technically on the police headquarters property. I was there, and it was a great to have a chance to meet Mercedes and Matt Lemp, the parents. Mercedes told me, "I'll always wonder whether the police intended to kill Duncan from the start. There was never a search. From the way that they conducted themselves, it was as if they intended to kill him before the raid even began." I didn't have authorization to use that quote at the time. I used it a couple months ago in a piece for USA Today on Duncan Lemp, but it was a really chilling quote from a mother whose son had been killed. Now, Duncan Lemp was taken down because of informants, among other things, and folks who knew him who had fabricated evidence against him. And looking around at the protests, people at that protest is like, whoa, they were a lot of dubious folks. Guys standing around screaming profanities at cops on bullhorns and doing these chants and, you know, blocking the road and stuff like that. I'm nothing like, you know, not too productive. One of the main organizers of this protest was urging people to take their rifles and handguns with them to the county police headquarters for the protest. You know, that sure as hell not legal in Montgomery County. I don't think it's legal in Maryland. But what this guy says on Facebook, he says, well, you know, just take your guns and just act like you're walking around, not part of the protest. And just by coincidence, this guy wasn't able to make it that morning to the protest.
Oh, shocker!
So, and I was well, and I was, you know, I was curious and checked his records, and you know, there were like three pages on the, you know, Maryland State records for his conduct. So about 10% of the protesters there got arrested that day. I think mostly for firearms offenses. I kept my distance. I had a press pass. It was like, you know, I'm staying away. There was an IT guy who was a friend of Duncan who, he was also aloof. I asked what he thought of the people. He said, you know, I didn't expect them to be that stupid. And I think there were probably some intelligent folks there, but you wouldn't know it from how most of them were talking. So the county covered up the killing until New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the county issues its final report on the killing of Duncan Lim. And the timing was no accident. So the gist of the report was, it was a good killing, trust us. So, and it was curious because the county offered a whole new version of how Duncan Lim got killed. The county said that there were two members at 4:48 a.m., two members of the SWAT team did what they call a break and rake. And break and rake is when you got two cops, one's got a fireman's pike, he smashes in the window and pulls back the curtains. And apparently at that point what they did is throw in the flashbangs, and then a second cop walked up with a rifle and shot Duncan Lemp five times at point blank range. Once the window was broken, you know, all hell broke loose. Now, it was a hell of a change from that first version of the shooting, which I read, you know, painfully there a few minutes ago, but apparently that first version was a typo. So, indeed, the entire thing, because it's like, I was trying to reconcile, okay, well, the police came in and gave commands and he did not obey, but there's actually a really morbid twist here, because the cops, you know, the first version says, well, and he was by the door and he had a rifle in the first version. They didn't mention they'd shot him to pieces and he was dead. That's why he was by the door with a rifle. But if they'd included that version in the first version, it wouldn't have looked so good. So they let the story cool off. So I did a quick piece on that for Jordan Bloom, American Conservative. The cops, county thought the report exonerated the police, but that was only if people don't know how to read or if they work for the Washington Post. So, because it had these details. You know, that it said the report, police targeted because one reason was they saw a picture he had on Instagram of him with a rifle and an Israeli assault weapon they said was illegal. You know, in the small print. Well, yeah, it was a specific weapon that was prohibited in Maryland. So, but late in the report, and almost like mentioning a minor technicality, the county prosecutor says, upon further investigation, it was determined that it was not an assault rifle because the county misidentified it before they killed him. But it was like, you know, it was treated like a close enough for government work kind of thing. Never mind. Nothing in that report indicated that Lemp was a threat to anybody before he was killed. He wasn't even a threat to the dogs in the neighborhood. And it would have been possible. The cops were surveilling him. The cops could have grabbed him when he went out to the store and then searched the house. Didn't happen. The police talked about their confidential source as a key part of their accusation. But so I'm wondering, you know, was this confidential source? Was he an anti-gun activist? Was he working off a plea bargain? Was it someone who got paid? And if he did got paid, then how much was his 30 pieces of silver for destroying Duncan Lemp? There you go. I was hoping someone would recognize that, you know. I was testing that on folks before the speech, and about half of them were saying, well, what's the price of silver today? And I'm thinking, no, that's not the issue. So there were a few weeks later, a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit by Judicial Watch cried out some videos that the SWAT team made at the raid scene. Oh, but it wasn't during the raid. It was after the shooting. They walked around and made photos of Duncan Lemp's gun and some of the chaos. One clip in their video shows Mercedes Lemp sitting on the bed weeping after her firstborn son had been killed. And it's jolting to see that. And then when you hear the police talk about, well, you know, he had a gun, there was this, it's like, you know, you just whack somebody and the mother's there is heartbroken. So, you know, about the only thing that the Lemp case proves so far is that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they aren't out to get you. But, you know, it was, okay, so that was Montgomery County. Elsewhere in Maryland, we don't know troubles, right? Okay, maybe a little bit of Baltimore City. And then there is PG, Prince Schwartz. How many people from PG here tonight?
Right on the line.
All right, on the line. Good place. And actually, 20 years ago, I did a story for Playboy and the PG police that talked about how they had the highest rate of shooting people in the country. In the prior decade, PG cops shot 122 people, killed 47. Almost half of them were unarmed, and many of them were completely innocent. Police department says every shooting is justified. Those were Maryland laws that were recently changed a little bit. Hopefully they'll do some progress on that. Okay, so Maryland's got some problems, but at least at the federal level, Uncle Joe's going to take care of us, right? Okay, well, maybe not. Maybe not. So
keep Corn Pop in check.
There you go. So Biden wants a federal law to ban ghost guns. This is going to be as effective as a federal regulation to ban ghosts.
Screw those gay men.
There you go. Biden also wants to bring back the ban on assault weapons, and some liberals want to ban all semi-automatic weapons, and you're going to round up 50 million guns. That'll be a job creation program for the cemeteries. So Biden's making the theme of his presidency to restore faith in government, restore trust in government. So who does he nominate for the head of the ATF? David Shipman, who was apparently at Waco and was at the Waco trial and recently lied, claiming that the Branch Davidians shot down two federal military helicopters. Complete fraud, never happened. But that was the kind of story that this guy tells. Even worse, there is apparently a photo of, you know, after the fire, after the FBI went in there with tanks and fired pyrotechnic rounds into their home, at their home, and the fire bursts out, kills 80 people. Some of the federal agents took trophy photos of themselves standing in the rubble where the children had burned to death shortly before. And apparently David Shipman is one of those people who did their grisly victory photo there at Waco. And this is the person that Biden wants to put at the head of the ATF. So I was curious. I saw that, you know, that controversy, and I said, what else did Biden say about Waco? I went back and researched it. So back at the time of the Waco shooting, the Waco assault, Biden was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee that has primary oversight of law enforcement. What did Biden say? Well, I think we should wait until the facts come out. It's kind of unclear. It's too soon to criticize law enforcement. We should wait a little while. And so Biden never had any hearings on Waco. However, in the following 2 years later, the Republicans had control of Congress and the Senate, and Orrin Hatch had hearings on Waco in that committee. So what does Biden say? Biden says that the record from Waco does not evidence any improper motive or intent on the part of law enforcement. Y'all know Waco a lot better than most folks. That's one of the joys of talking to a libertarian audience. I don't need to explain the basics. Y'all got a handle on what happened there. Biden says it was no... what's that?
We talk Ruby Ridge too.
Well, yeah, that's... That's coming up. It's coming up. Next phase. I hate to be premature. It's good to have a libertarian night. You do a joke like that, you know. If I was talking to a bunch of evangelicals, you know, the vaudeville hook would come out about there. And so,
you would have caught your silver joke.
That's true. Well, I think most people here, enough caught it. So, anyhow, so, you know, how much BS was there in the Waco raid? A lot more than the media ever admitted. The Fed said they had to do that massive raid because Koresh never came out. That was bullshit. Hell of a lot worse than that. 9 days before the raid, undercover ATF agents go knock on Koresh's door and ask him to go shooting with them. So Koresh and the ATF agents go clinking. And Koresh knows they're undercover ATF, and they talk about gun laws, and the agents hand their guns to Koresh, and Koresh provides the ammo, and the agents write a memo 4 days later. He was very concerned about federal violations of gun laws, but they said that they couldn't grab him without a frontal attack with 70 agents. So Biden said, you know, Biden says that the real problem with Waco was conspiracy nuts who don't trust the government.
I think there's a few on that table over there.
So Biden, in this Senate hearing, Biden swears that Waco wasn't big government. But he says, you know, the real problem is a growing number of people across the country who are seizing on the incidents at Waco as well as Ruby Ridge to suggest that law enforcement is our enemy. That's like, wow. I mean, and he says this stuff in public. Now, as far as the power of law enforcement, last week the Justice Department announced that it finished its investigation of the police officer who killed a protester at the Capitol on January 6th. The feds announced the cop who shot Ashley Babbitt did not violate her rights by shooting her at point-blank range. Did not violate her rights. That's the exact phrase that the Justice Department under Clinton used to absolve the FBI sniper who killed Vicki Weaver as she was standing in her with her baby in her cabin door at Ruby Ridge. Did not violate her civil rights. I mean, the thing we have, this country's becoming a two-tiered society. Those above the law and those below it. Those who the law fails to bind and those who the law fails to protect. Now, so shift gears here a little bit. I talked to former CIA chief John Brennan. He wasn't able to be here, but he asked me to send his greetings.
Give him my regards.
So that, you know, it wasn't exactly that, but Brennan is thinking of you. So, you know, Brennan went on TV back in January and said federal intelligence agencies are moving in laser-like fashion to go after various suspect groups, and Brennan mentioned libertarians. I assume you all have all heard that, but... Well, there you go. So, you know, it's interesting. You flash back 6 or 7 years, and all the talk in D.C. was, this is the libertarian moment has arrived. And I always thought it was, you know, a bunch of horse crap. I've been around D.C. long enough. I see changes in fashion. And I mean, well, Obama's still president, and, you know, Joe Biden's vice president, and, you know, we got Eric Holder at the Justice Department. Like, this is a really lame libertarian moment, folks. But, you know, the last 5 years, obviously that wasn't the case. But, you know, the Biden is, there's been a huge increase in hostility towards libertarians in the last 4 to 5 years in Washington and elsewhere. And this is something y'all have got to keep in mind because, you know, libertarians are in the crosshair, and there are probably going to be more in the crosshair as time goes on. Biden's pushing to get a new terrorism law that will allow it to launch a lot more surveillance against targets, including libertarians. I mean, you know, the rhetoric is so extreme now. The Capitol Police Chief said that all the 10,000 people who walked down the mall after hearing Trump on January 6th walk to the Capitol, all of them were terrorists. I mean, shit, most of them just walked down the mall after hearing a bad speech. I mean, that doesn't make somebody a terrorist. There was a very small number who did violence, forcing their way in or attacking the police. That's in a totally different category. But, you know, the other term, the code word is extremist. Well, people are extremists. You know, I've been an extremist for a long time. I'm still here. But folks don't realize, you know, people sometimes ask me for advice on how they should deal with challenges from government officials. So I tell them, the first rule is to never take legal advice from a college dropout. You know, always a bad idea. But I'll make an exception here. So, you know, few Americans realize how badly the legal playing field is tilted against them. FBI agents knock on the door. Many Americans don't hesitate to let them in and talk because those who have nothing to hide have nothing to fear. I mean, that's you know, put that on some cemetery tombstones. But the FBI has a law that they can criminalize even casual comments. Federal agents have the right to lie to you and to send you to prison if you lie to them. Under the Federal False Statements Act, any citizen who makes a single word false statement, yes or no, to a federal agent, can get 5 years in prison.
Martha Stewart.
Yeah, Martha said $250,000 fine. It gets worse. You don't. It gets worse. You don't have to actually lie because of how the FBI does it. What happens? FBI sends out two agents, and the agents interrogate you, and one guy sits there and takes notes. Most law enforcement agencies at this point do audio or tape recordings of interrogations, interviews, stuff like that. FBI refuses to do that. They're still in the 1930s. So what they do is sit down a day or two afterwards and write up a memo. This is what he said. And Bob Jones said this and Fred said this. You know, based on their memory, based on their convenient memory, based on them getting promotion for getting you indicted. So it's an incredibly targeted bias thing. So, and you have to realize that if an FBI agent shows up at your doorstep, that agent may have already accessed every email and text message that you sent in recent years. A person might have backed up all your social media activity, including those private Facebook messages you sent. Ha. So the FBI may have also grabbed up all your credit card data and other financial data. And then they sit down and start asking you 20 questions. And if you get any of the questions wrong, boom, you could be facing an indictment. Or maybe what they'll do instead of getting an indictment is try to turn you into an informant like they did, you know, going after Duncan Lemp. That wasn't federal as far as I know, but, you know, folks forget how the FBI became America's thought police. And it was that ended only less than 50 years ago.
Never ended.
Well, okay, I was trying to put a positive spin. Hard audience for a positive spin. You know, back in Hoover's final 15 years, the FBI ran the COINTEL program. COINTEL had ran thousands of covert operations, and what the FBI did, they would incite street warfare between violent groups. They got people killed. They would get people fired. They would target people as informants. They would destroy marriages with these poison pen letters. And they went after leftist groups, black groups, white supremacist groups, and anti-war groups. A Senate report, 1976, says American people must be assured that never again will a federal agency be permitted to create, to conduct a secret war against those citizens it considers threats to the established order. But the legal restrictions on the FBI have evaporated. They can do what they want. And Congress is happy to see them doing it. At the same time, entrapment has been defined out of existence by the Supreme Court. Informants, undercover agents, can do almost anything to entice you to break the law, and then they can try and destroy you. A lot of the terrorist cases have involved, you know, informants who planted the idea of bombing government buildings, who gave them the bomb, who drove them to the bomb site, and then, boom, the person gets busted. So, yeah, I mean, people shouldn't do that stuff, but, you know. So, anyhow, to circle back to the legal advice. Here's where I turn to the wisdom of, you know, some of my favorite characters on YouTube. And these are the Pot Brothers at Law. These guys are who? It's a couple of middle-aged guys. I think they're based out in California. That's it. That's it. That's it. All right, we got Pot Brother fans here, but you know, there's two guys. There's one. Both of them are often wearing sunglasses. There's one guy standing up front, the other guy's standing back, and they're always puffing on cigars or. All right, no more jokes. You know, they're always, you know, smoking a joint or a cigar or whatever. And so it's real simple legal advice. And, you know, there was an episode where they were saying, okay, you're at a cannabis dispensary, the cops come in, and so the lead guy says, Bobby, what do you do in those cases? You shut the fuck up. Another case, he says, okay, you're driving down, the cop stops you, the cop starts asking, how was your day? How are you doing? What are you up to? What do you do, Bobby? You shut the fuck up. And so my question to you is, What do you do when the FBI agents come to your doorstep? Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's helpful. That is helpful. So, I was talking to Otto. Otto said I should have an upbeat ending. And, you know, it might be the Pot Brothers at law suffice, but I'll try to have a little, put a positive spin on things. Carrie had such a very uplifting speech. And here I am talking about all these dead bodies. It's a pleasure to talk to libertarians because they've got so much better bullshit radars than most Americans. For most people, liberty is an abstraction until government agents ravage their lives. But it's important to find a way for us to weaponize government abuses and atrocities to help people wake people up to the perils that they're facing. 25 years ago, I taped on my office wall a New York Times headline, and it said, "For the Chechens in the mountains, fighting is winning." You know, I got no sympathy for the Chechen terrorists. They've done a lot of bad things. But I respect the Chechens' doggedness. They've been fighting for 200 years against the czars, the Soviets, and the Russian government. That headline, 1995 headline, it's a reminder that if we keep fighting for freedom, we are winning. Politicians will never be able to outlaw the spirit of liberty. And we got to think of what the alternative is. I mean, the alternative is to presume everything will work out fine and we just trust the government and kowtow. But yeah, well, tell that to Duncan Lemp. So, anyhow, on that note, on that upbeat note, I'll draw the curtain of mercy.
But there are three things that I understand to protect yourself from any police authority that doesn't have a warrant. Number one, if they show up to your door, don't invite them in.
No shit.
If you're going to talk to them on the outside, so you never know. Once they're inside, you have given them permission to go ahead and do other things.
Yep.
They can stop in the car. They're stuck in the car. And they want to search you. And they have no probable cause. You say, "I do not consent to a search."
Yep.
Which may not stop you from just being able to at least search you, but I understand that your civil rights will be protected. The third thing, if they stop you and ask you for your ID, you merely have to say, "Am I free to go?" And if you don't honor that the court will overturn it.
Well,
this was told to me by a very famous former judge.
It's certainly true. The first point, as far as don't let them in without a warrant. Second point, if you're driving, they get all kinds of trump cards. Stop and asking ID. I mean, you know, that's kind of. Yeah, I mean, there are ways to avoid to do that. I mean, but it doesn't matter what the law. It doesn't matter what the law says. It's what a judge allows, and judges have allowed a lot of horrendous violations. So. Well, there's a lot of bootlicking judges out there who should be traffic court flunkies. So many judges. If you look at a lot of the search warrants that are approved for no-knock raids. It's like, okay, judge, you know, why are you here? I mean, it goes back to the standard. People have used this joke, you know, talking about for asset forfeiture, one of the biggest abuses is bringing in a dog. And, you know, they'll take a handful of money and the dog will show an alert. And that supposedly proves that the money is drug tainted. Well, I mean, the vast majority of currency is drug tainted. And someone said, well, hell, that's how we're going to do it. Let's just make the dogs the judges. You know, because it's complete crap that judges would uphold a seizure based on that. So, yeah.
Other than left-wing and anti-union, people on the left tend to speak on civil liberties, and then people on the left really mention
I didn't catch the last two words.
Matt Taibbi.
Right, right. Counterpunch.
Hasn't Bradley Bauko done a lot on Duncan?
No, I think he's done nothing on Duncan. Bradley's done a lot of great work, a lot of cases, and you know he's done fine books. And he's I'm really glad the Washington Post, you know, has him running for them. But Bradley's in Tennessee, and he did a lot of great stuff on Arkansas. So, but Counterpunch has done some fine stuff on. And civil liberties. I mean, I disagree with them on economics, but they've been great on the anti-war, great on very good on foreign policy, and very honest on civil liberties. So, yeah.
First of all, Jim, thank you very much for all the great work that you've done.
Yeah. Thanks.
In my opinion, certainly over the last 10 years, really the last 20 or 30 years, has been the climate of the ACLU with respect to...
Yes.
Damn near all of our liberties, First Amendment liberties, Second Amendment, well, they were never going to Second Amendment. But search and seizure, Fourth Amendment, they seem to pick and choose about whom they get solicited for. Do you see much hope that they'll actually see a reinvigorated ACLU actually standing up for civil liberties?
No. Thanks, Jim Lark, for the excellent question. Let me elaborate on that. There was a, I started out saying how the ACLU completely ignored the Duncan Lemp case. What they did do, they have been, you know, they've made comments on police shootings. They had a statement that they were, I think, paying to advertise, and they had a long list of names of people who had been killed by police in Maryland. By Maryland police in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years. And I was kind of, you know, I was looking at some of the names that were missing. One thing that struck me was there was a case in Montgomery County about a month or maybe 2 months after the Duncan Lemp case. There was a guy, in Silver Spring, a cop was called out, and there was a big guy who was menacing people with a butcher knife. And he saw the cop, and he charged at the cop with a butcher knife. Cop shot him and killed him. But the ACLU listed that as one of the questionable police shootings in Maryland.
Wow.
And it's like, I mean, I'm very critical of the cops, but it's bullshit to say every cop shooting is murder. Because it looked like a clean cop. It looked like a clean shooting. And if you'd send a social worker out there instead, you might have had to pay for two body bags. It's sad to see what the ACLU has become. I see their emails, and they're a huge issue is to cancel all student loans. I guess there's a lot of lawyers that work for the ACLU who've got some debt load, and they want to have their law school debt wiped out. But it's tawdry, and it's sad because, you know, this is an organization that did great work on some issues for many years, but now they seem to have completely caved. So, yeah.
So here's my comment, by the way. I just remember now I actually have a part of it. It's flexyourrights.org.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Yes, sir. Mr. Colbert, do you see a relationship between the never-ending war and what amounts to war here in the United States?
Yeah.
All of these raids are search and destroy missions.
Yeah, well, it's sad to see the government agents treating more and more America like Fallujah. So, which the U.S., which George W. Bush, in vengeance, just practically destroyed the entire city and did God knows how much damage with some of the chemicals we used there. That was...
Thank you.